In the ancient world, hope was always an endangered species. The various gods of the ancient world offered so little hope for the living, left behind at the death of a loved one. Some offered a hope of a relatively painless existence in some shadowy underland. Some offered absorption into some apersonal whole. Some offered a recycling program in which the soul came back as somebody else, but without memories and self-identity. To a philosopher or theologian of the time, these worldviews would have been interesting and intriguing and might have offered important insights into the world. But as soon as the theologian became a bereaved father whose heart ached and wailed to hold his beloved daughter alive in his arms again, they would have seemed as empty and as useless as yesterday's shadow. Modern systems are not radically better, living on in the memories of others, through one's writing, or in one impact on the lives of others, also wonderful and precious gifts those are. But they are still metaphors of compromise and acquiescence. But there was one strange group in the ancient world, a nation of escaped slaves, whose God would not allow them to accept such compromises with death. His messengers and prophets constantly confronted his people with a unique message. Do not accept these substitutes. Do not settle for less. Do not compromise with death to the point of redefining life. Look up. Hope for real immortality. Hope to see your loved ones in a new body with the same smiles and the shared memories. Hope to feast with them again and laugh with them again and dance with them again. Hope to hug them and kiss them and tell them you love them again. Do not despair of the paradise of the stories of those oldest among you. It was real and will be yet real again. Do not settle for anything less than resurrection from the dead. I will find a way, though it shred my own heart with anguish and pain and cost me what is dearest to me, to make this happen for you. I will reach my hand of intense life itself. If immortality's very definition of renewal forces greater than death into your history. And all you have to do is reach out and touch your little mortal finger to mine, and immortal life will flow from me to you. A spark of my life will remain in your heart and produce renewal and joy and love and peace and second childhoods and fresh starts and second chances and comfort and kindness and dancing in your life today. And at the beginning of my future, it will burst into immortal and incandescent flame forever and ever. And lest I terrify you with this powerful hand of light, I will put a face on it, a face like yours, a face of sorrows and a face of joys, no face of power, but a face of love. You will know it by its life in itself, its gentleness and humility, its challenge to evil, its refusal to compromise with death, deceit, or apathy, its solidarity with the needy, the non-arrogant, open-hearted people of no hope, its outrageous claims, its lack of even the slightest taint of human treachery, and the ripples it creates in history. And so 2,000 years ago, that Easter tomb was empty, and a handful of people least likely to become executives claimed to see a resurrected Jesus of Nazareth multiple times, alone and in groups, in various settings. Hope, without compromise, walked among them after having been nailed to a tree in a Roman execution. This hope was recognized by them for what it was, true and tangible and touchable. And the ripples in history and in lives began. Fast forward some 2,000 years. One little Glenn and one little Cindy. Lives touched by the lives of others who had been touched by the lives of others. In a chain of love reaching back to that first Easter. Met at a Bible study to marvel at that face. From that meeting came a marriage and children, among whom was our Brit. Without the resurrection so long ago, and the hope engendered by it, so powerful a fuel that the earliest followers of Jesus sacrificed health, respectability, economic prospects, social standing, and often their very lives for this hope. Without that resurrection, there would be no Brit. That Brit that touched each of our lives here today simply would not have been born without the reality of that event so long ago and the ripples in human lives that it caused through history. But it is that same resurrection which created her which will bring us all together again once more in the future. And Brit had touched this God and celebrated aspects of this life through her life. From her conventional and traditional baptism as an elementary school kid to her philosophical understandings of the nature of good and evil, she interacted with our God. Often she would pray for me and tell me so on email. One email from when she was 17 thanked me, quote, for showing me the beauty of the Lord and answering all my questions. The peaceful reassurance you've given me all my life that through him I'll never have to face this entirely alone. At 19, she wrote this to me. I've been reading a book on viruses, and I always keep thinking about how you use the model of the virus as a metaphor for evil, especially when the book goes into detailed clinical description of how viruses work, how they exist in this strange state between life and non-life. It's a brilliant metaphor, and ever since you passed that viewpoint on to me, I have never seen good and evil as two ends of the same spectrum since. And this seems to be a very common belief among people, that good and evil somehow define or balance each other, not that evil is parasitic of good, but the parasitic model fits reality so much better in my experience. I have gotten into many a pseudo-philosophic debate with my friends in an attempt to convince them that good can exist without evil. But sometimes, no matter how strong my arguments are, people have a very hard time letting go of this yin-yang, mutually independent idea of good and evil. I suspect some of you have been on the other end of that argument at late nights with her, because she stayed like a bulldog after that with us all. I wish I could learn to argue it more eloquently, but I'm always surprised at how strongly people hold on to this notion. I wish I could give people this perspective, because it was such an eye-opener when you gave it to me. It was a beautiful, beautiful truth for her, and it gave her tremendous release in certain aspects of her life. Her heart, as you would be very much aware as we are, was a thankful heart. One of the basic means is for reaching up to touch God and for reaching out to welcome others into your life, of course, is thanks. This past Christmas, she wrote me in a present she made for me, a photo album of the pictures that of she and I together. Said on the front page, it said, Father, Dad, Daddy, teacher, and friend. Of all the lives I could have grown up inside, I thank God with every breath that it was yours. She really thanked God. I wish she just play into the day. Absolutely. She told me she prayed daily to the Lord in the same childlike way I do. Face up, pacing around, honest-hearted, no ritual, no holy gestures, no sacred postures, no canned formula. Just a heart that told her Heavenly Father what was on her mind and heart. As she learned more about the beauty of God's life and creation, she shared many of her discoveries with you and with us. More than once, she had one or two of you over to our home, and in the wee hours of the morning, our discussions on God, history, evil, the future flowed like water. Her perspectives encouraged many and challenged many to see the bigger picture and this optimism of which Hannah spoke. I found a letter from someone written to her during the last couple of weeks in San Francisco. Here's an excerpt. To Brit, so dear and sweet, you brought confusion and clarity into my life in a way few could be capable of. Your presence in my life has made such a positive impact, enlightening and changing the way I think about events or problems that daily trouble my mind. Unknowingly, you've eased my tension, lessened my pain, and added clarity into my emotions. Friend, I thank you. Her faith, like all of those in our family, was semi-traditional. Of course, it was anchored in the same history and resurrection of Jesus that caused her birth, but it didn't take on conventional forms. Our Easter mornings and our Christmas mornings as a little family began with an hour or two or three of learning about the historical and philosophical background of the relevant sections of the Bible. Many were her questions, intense were her intention, and deep was her appreciation for the perspective gained. I remember so vividly one remark she made last semester after coming home from some college class. She spoke about the sadness she had when some of the material in class seemed antagonistic to what she called the beliefs she loved so much. We had endless discussions on endless topics with only the animation that you know Britt had. As I am sure many of you know, and can probably even envision these arguments, ranging from methods in the social sciences, the armchair psychology thing, to the heart and passion of God for life and beauty. And just like me, she had her moral inconsistencies. And just like me, she had her theological quirks. Just like me, she had her doubts. Just like me, she had her pulls toward the destructive. And just like me, she had her irrational fears. But in one of the last writings we have of her before she went home to be with her God and dance before Him, she still manifests the resilience of this worldview and of her passion for finding the good before her. She wrote, "You don't have to do anything if you don't want to, if you don't feel that it's worth it. It's just a window in the infinite universe that gives you a sporting chance at finding the very treasures and fruits of all that has ever been and that all will ever be. Through this journey, through this window, your soul has the chance to become more like God, to be crowned a high priestess, warrior, princess." Some of you will recognize the battle angel imagery from that. "You can be still and apathetic, dim and tired, and sit by the side. Or you can become a child and run into the forest, sweat, strain, and push through the rough parts, not out of toughness, but out of passion for the rewards and sweetness hidden on the path. To love the sweet and exquisite so fully that it overshadows the pain and sadness is to become closer to God, to become more fitted to the universe." She was no stranger to pain, but saw the opportunity it presented. She wrote, "Pain is a lesson that will lead you to better things than you ever dreamed if you so choose to learn it." She was beset by many foes, some from the culture, some from within, some from us here today, and some of her own making. But that eternal spark and eternal faith buried deep in her heart, the wellspring of her life, could not be suppressed. It erupted constantly in her laughter, in late-night discussions with all of us, in how she dealt with doubt and fears, and even in the fearlessness with which she often faced new and dangerous experiences. She helped many of us here today to see the beauty of the created order as a clue to the deeper issues and the mystical issues behind it. And that relationship with God also worked in her heart to always bring her back to the beauty of her worldview at times. The night before she was admitted to the emergency room, she called me from San Francisco where she was staying. She told me in her precious, dear, and honest and clear voice that she had gotten, quote, "a little messed up," close quote, in the past few weeks, and asked me to come get her and to bring her home where it was safe. And in her face and bright eyes and effervescent smiles and long, warm hugs those few hours, though she called me an angel of mercy and rescue, I saw the angelic fire in her eyes and her heart that I have always known as Britt. And she said that home had never felt so safe at that time. To me, her father, she has been many, many things, and God has changed my life many ways through her. She was a constant source of joy, warmth, pride, friendship, deep friendship, laughter, innovation, creativity, and comfort in the context of my own personal limitations and challenges. I too learned from her perspectives, and I grew from our discussions. She loved me while on earth, really, really loved me. And I have been helped by God to be able to feel that warmth, see that glow, and hear that music. We all know it's brilliant. The second 25 years of my life have been spent getting to know my tender-hearted Lord. And Britt, along with my other amazing, precious, God-given children, has been a constant reminder that my God brings truly good things into my life. As her father, I will not settle for less than hold her in my arms again, in larger-than-life emotions and vividness and intensity. I expect her resurrection and my resurrection in that future. And my confidence that this hope is well-founded is anchored in history, at the empty tomb and bodily resurrection and visible appearances of this Jesus of Nazareth. I have every reason, as the skeptic that I am too, to place my confidence in this unique one in history, this gentle shepherd who conquered death and promises us, his little lambs, confused and undisciplined and bouncing around and always running away from the shepherd, that he can and will do the same for us. I am exceedingly grateful for having had such intimacy with such concentrated witness for 2 decades. And I look forward to seeing her again and for her comments on how I live the rest of my life from today, because she will be my best critic, I'm sure. May we all learn from her perspective and her inner love for the Lord and from her example of warmth, inclusion, and devotion to her friends, being a little more like God was her friend. And may we ever reach up to touch God's hand of life in His Son. And I thank all of you for the parts that you played, the richness and the individual perspective that you brought to my precious daughter, because she passed that on and it became part of who she was.